my name is Michael Wilson. I'm producer of the film.
And my name is Martin Campbell. I'm the director of the film.
This is the new United Artists logo. It's the first time they've used it on a Bond film.
And here we are at the opening down-the-barrel shot, as they say, which has been redone, I think, technically far better. And there's Pierce Brosnan, of course, who is the new James Bond, and a terrific James Bond, I think, he turned out to be.
Yeah, Martin, you shot this. Remember, we reshot it after someone else had done it.
Yeah, I think it was to do with... I remember when you came up and said to me that the way he's standing, that you didn't like him, quite rightly... the way he was holding the gun, the way he turned the camera didn't seem right, so we had to get the correct physical look to the movie.
And here we are in Lugano in Switzerland.
Yeah, you supervised all this, didn't you?
Yeah, well, it was done by the second unit director, Ian Sharp, and he was down there doing this work.
Yeah, it's a tremendously high dam. I mean, the great problem here, as you'll see the stunt in a second, is, of course, to get a dam that was virtually vertical and didn't actually pan out the bottom so that when he makes the jump, he doesn't hit himself on the concrete. Actually, there was a fairly large crane, I think, Mike, wasn't there?
To keep him out. And the big problem was it did slope, and he wasn't so concerned about hitting it on the way down, but, you know, the bungee cord bounces back, and he was afraid he was going to scrape himself against the wall.
Well, it's a hell of a jump. I mean, it's, I think, a world record, wasn't it, in terms of the actual jump? There's no cheating here, by the way. There's no digital. It's entirely what you see is take one, I seem to remember, was it?
That's right. We didn't do this again.
And just look at the way he now pulls the gun out. I think this takes real nerve and concentration. Now, given the distance he's dropped, he'll now pull the gun out, and he does it so smoothly and easily, it's perfect. I mean, that takes a very skillful stunt.
You know, I asked him what he was thinking of just before he jumped off, and he said, the last thought that went in my mind was Beavis and Butthead.
But anyway, this is all second unit, of course, and they did a terrific job of this, and now, of course, we are back in the studio doing, getting into the nitty-gritty of the scene.
First shot of Pierce Brosnan, the eyes, right there. We were holding him back a bit, you remember, to sort of, for that.
Oh, that's right. The idea was not to actually see who it is until, and we never see who this person is until he's revealed in a few seconds. But this was actually a real toilet. This was no set. We actually used the toilet that was in the studio that we had made up.
Yeah, we went out to Leavesden and made a studio at the old Rolls-Royce plant, and this was part of the facilities that were actually there.
Now we see him for the first time. There he is, right? And Peter Lamont built all of this within the confines. The sets were built out at Leavesden, the old Rolls-Royce factory in London. I think there's 200 acres on that site, isn't there, Mike?
Yeah, and we were using, when we get into the gas plant, which is coming up, we were using the... engine testing room, the jet engine testing rooms, and so they're very substantially built building.
Yeah, and of course a lot of this is incorporated in the set that we're about to see in the big gas plant. Peter Lamont did a terrific job of all this stuff, and in fact I think this was all kitchens from the cafeteria that was once used on the site.
Here we're going to see Sean Bean now.
I got this idea from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Okay, so he moves forward into the light. Now, he's not the villain that we think he is, or a Russian soldier. He is, in fact, 006. So there's a scene in Butch Cassidy very similar to that, which, of course, you always pinch from the best, so I did.
And of course, we wanted to cast someone who actually was a potential Bond type, you know, the same type of guy, same age, same look.
Yeah, you know, what was important was that, you know, given the previous villains have always been like Goldfinger, for example, Gert Frode, they've all kind of been maniacs, or they've been the head of Spectre, the head of Smersh, so on and so forth. This, of course, is 006, so it was important, I think, that we all agreed that Sean Bean could have actually at one time played Bond and was a contender, so who better?
What's interesting about that, by the way, we just saw an execution that was totally in your mind by sound effects and all. Everything's off camera, but it's very effective.
Well, actually, what's interesting about that was I remember the German censor came across, and one of the things, ironically, there's very little he complained about the piece you know, seeing the film, he said that was one of them, was the two guys being hit so early on. He thought the German market may object to that.
By a guy that was supposed to be a hero at the time. Of course, yeah. He did turn out to be a villain.
Yeah, but it was a good point. I don't think the film lost anything because of it.
This is very cleverly done, Martin. This was part of your the magic of cinema. You've got this set, so it looks like both there's a stairway and a door on both sides of the set, although it was only one-sided.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Very good.
You can cheat, of course.
I know. I'm always amazed when I see this, and I think, God, how, you know, what you can do with this.
Now, here we have Oromov, of course, who's played by Gottfried John, German actor, who speaks extremely good English, although everybody you will note that is Russian has a Russian accent. Of course, they're talking Queen's English, but with a Russian accent. And I think he brings to the part of the Russian general a very interesting slant, and largely because he's the actor he is. Nothing that I contributed. I mean,
he's an excellent actor.
Yeah, quirky, interesting. I think.
Original.
One of the nice things about Pierce is that he managed to continue the element of humour about it. You know, he had the ability to be able to be self-effacing, to be able to deliver the humorous lines. He's an actor that has that ability, and I think it shows him up well in the picture.
Yeah, this is a very tense moment here.
Interesting point. We had to cut the actual shooting. It was originally the original cut.
Shooting through the head here.
Yes, and now that actually, it turns out that both censors in the US and England objected to that. And so you'll see, of course, you don't actually see him pull the trigger.
Him fall over.
That's there. Right. That was a sensor cut. Again, I don't think it lost anything, and there he is, yeah.
Blow the gasters!
Yes. Anyway, here we are.
Come out with your hands above you.
And here's Bond creeping across the floor.
What I always thought was amazing about this was you put a squeaky wheel in here, and it always got a big laugh in the cinemas. It's one of those things that you do thinking, well, we need a little squeak here, and yet it has a reaction with the audience.
Now, isn't that bizarre? I still to this day don't quite know why. I put it in because all my supermarket trolleys, you know, I always get the one with the squeak, and it seemed that given there's silence virtually in the scene.
I remember that was a little element you insisted on having written in.
Now, you know where I pinched that from? The Wild Bunch, Sam Peckinpah. I pinched all these moments, of course, from other movies, but there was a moment in The Wild Bunch where the Mexican lieutenant shoots one of his men for doing just that. So.
You can't.
Now, this is very interesting from effects, wasn't it, Mike?
Yeah,
this
big effect. A lot of stuntmen got paid that day.
Yes. But also, Chris Corbolt, who was the effects guy, had those barrels punched out with levers and things to get the distance. Remember the plane with the... you want to talk about how it was powered?
Yeah, this one... Yeah, this plane actually was a little motor. It drove the wheels on a chain drive, so the propeller's not doing anything. It's all being driven by its own wheels. But it is a real plane body we had. We made it up. And this is all in the back lot. This is a Derek Mennings painting.
Which was shot all in camera. There's not a process in that shot. It's all entirely shot on camera.
It's a mat with the center cut out with the airfield in the middle with real people. Beautiful job.
Yeah, tremendous job that. And there's great stunt work in this as well. Simon Crane, the stunt arranger, who, by the way, also did Braveheart, did a tremendous job on this and kind of very inventive, I think, with the stunts and so forth. The stunt you're about to see, of course, is one that everybody kind of starts to laugh at. It's so crazy, but in a way, I think it's probably pure James Bond, in my view.
That's right. When we were up on the top of the mountains in Switzerland, I was down there and... we're shooting this thing. We actually shot this jump 7 times.
God, that's
to get
right.
It. And it was a guy named Zhu, that French guy, who did this jump. He was...
Now, that's all for real, you see, there. Yeah. And, of course, am I right? It was so difficult to line up the...
It was the timing.
Because the plane never touched the runway, of course.
No,
it was like...
It came overhead, and then the motorcycle was underneath.
That's right. It was about 10 feet above it. And, actually, when you see the snow spray out from the wheels, that was all done digitally, in fact.
Yeah, some of this was done with a diver, and some was done with Pierce in the studio.
And the models and all sorts of things.
a wide shot there. Yeah. That's Switzerland.
And they're tying all these elements up.
That's a model going down the ground.
We did the model once.
Here.
Remember, we rebuilt the model and we redid it again. Drove us mad, but in the end it works. So, and I think it sort of brings Bond right back into what Bond was, which is those kind of things are slightly ludicrous. But nevertheless, I think everybody enjoyed that scene. They certainly laughed at it by the time he gets into the...
Now, this is Danny Kleiman's visual effect...
Well, of course, our real problem here, wasn't it, was to find somebody who would inherit the mantle from...
Morris Binder.
Well, Morris Binder, that's right. God, I can never remember his name.
Well, you didn't work with him, but he was a great guy.
Yeah.
Wonderful. You know, what's interesting about this, we had... I just got a copy of the Moscow Times from Russia.
Huh.
And they say that this was one of the most offensive things to the... Indian Communist Party and several other Communist parties that are still active throughout the world, that the icons of Russian communism were destroyed not by a militaristic invasion or anything, but by bikini-clad women in high heels and hammers. You know, they took the sort of symbolism of all this, like the competing cultures, very
see.
Much to heart. And they were going to boycott the film in India.
Oh, my God. Party.
Simply, primarily because of this sequence to take make fun of these almost religious icons.
Oh, I see. That's interesting, isn't it?
And it's when you look at it in that light, you see what they must have been talking about.
Yes. Oh, well. But I mean, what's interesting about the sequence is that Danny Kleiman, you know, I think plays a real homage to Morris Binder. And I think it's got the kind of sexiness. I think it has... something to do with the theme of the story. So he's kept that flame burning, really, and I think he did a marvelous job of this. I was so thrilled when I saw it for the first time. I mean, it was...
He showed it to us in drawings, and he did a beautiful storyboard. It really came out very close, including the colors, which was quite amazing.
Yeah, he did a lot of preparation, they did a lot of work, and they did a very fine job. And
I always thought Terry Rawlings got a good one here. Good credit. He was very happy with it.
Yes, I don't know about Phil May, who he would probably complain, like he always does, of course, on these things. You know, he doesn't get the credits at all masked and so forth.
There's Eric Serra's credit. He was kind of an experiment, you know, to take go from the traditional music. I think it worked quite well, but it has been somewhat controversial among...
Yeah, I think, you know, there's some people who said they thought it was terrific. Others say they didn't like it at all. I think those that were offended by it were the aficionados who wanted, you know, the old Bond themes and so forth. But of course, we must remember we have a generation beyond the previous Bond film who are seeing Bond for a first time. So there was an attempt there to actually bring those people into
And of course, Tina Turner was great.
Oh, she's such,
she really belts it out. She was a great trooper. Wonderful. Wonderful result. And getting Bono on the Edge to write the song was a real coup.
So yeah, that was absolutely great. Now, here we are, of course. We're about to be introduced to our femme fatale, which is...
Famke Janssen in the red Ferrari, which, as you know, everyone is holding their breath because we only had that on loan.
Yes. And actually, there is a shot here which you've got to see, which I remember you coming back apoplectic one day. Well, Barbara was, you know, and it'll happen very quickly here where it skids down the shingle. And in fact, they collided. Of course, we cut away before that moment, but...
That's right. We knifed both cars were sort of...
And I think they said the bill was something like $80,000. Here we go here, right?
Right
now,
there.
The next cut...
That's when they hit.
That's when they hit.
Yeah.
But of course, we cut off earlier, and they had to repair the car overnight to bring it back in so we could film in the morning.
Now, Barbara went down on this unit and was working, and they had terrible problems because we were shooting this, although it was the south of France, they had... It would be sunny one day and snowing the next.
And misty, do you remember the mist? I was up
fog.
There. I shot all the close-ups, by the way. The rest of it, it should be said, actually, that I storyboarded it. Remember,
yes,
we storyboarded,
we
looked at these sequences, we talked about it. Mm. And I think most of the, in fact, all the action sequences were very precisely storyboarded.
Well,
and
frame for frame, it was good.
Yeah, and we had a wonderful storyboard artist whose work, you know, could go into an art gallery, quite honest. But all of this was storyboarded very much as you see it, but a great job by the second unit. I, of course, shot the close-ups, indeed, mm-hmm. with the actors and so forth. But all the action stuff was shot by a very competent, very good second unit.
Yeah, it's Ian Sharp and then Harvey Harrison was photographer.
Yes, who had many a good night, I seem to remember, at a restaurant.
He did a good job here. We were.
Yes, he did. Marvelous job.
Turned out well.
Yes, here she is. And so all of this, a lot of this is under crank camera, of course, mm-hmm. but not enough to make it obvious.
20 frames or something, no, just to add a little edge to it.
Yeah, just right. And every often the frame count was different for each particular shot, I mean, given what they had to do.
Do you remember all this with the bicyclists? Oh, how we edited this up and down, in and out.
We couldn't make this work. You know, if we held on any longer, it made the whole thing seem just too stupid. And finally, Terry Rawlings would come back and he'd recut it and we'd recut it. And, you know, nobody was happy until finally, I think we
put this shot in.
Yeah,
remember,
we put
that
shot
was
in.
It.
That was it.
We tried to find that shot. We couldn't tie him up before.
I knew it was there because I'd storyboarded it, but we had to dig it out of the files, and here you go. And we don't dwell on it. Now we go, they all fall over. The French, of course, hated this bit. And here they go, yes. That's and the right. Ferrari's an interesting one. Do you remember we had to put the Ferrari in, or we had to pay the bill for the dent?
We had to pay the bill for the dent and having that extending shot to make sure that the Ferrari beat the
dent. Yes, otherwise
the Aston Martin.
Yes. Otherwise we'd have to pay the money to repair it. Now this is interesting. This is a studio shot, the two shot in the car frontal, and of course behind it is
another shot that was reshot.
Yes,
twice.
Yes. Oh God, yes, the bloody champagne bottle.
The first time they did it, they put the label in upside down.
Yes, and you couldn't see what the hell it was, so we redid that. Now of course we cut to Monte Carlo itself, and there we have it. Now the next sequence is a scene I've always liked. I think you've always liked, you know, which beautiful. Is the gambling, the classic Bond gambling scene. With all the kind of pizzazz that only Monte Carlo Casino can give you.
Wonderful shot at night. Phil Mayhew did a great job here.
Yeah, beautiful.
I mean, it's just as beautiful as it can be. It's really fairyland here.
Yeah, and it just looks really, really classy. He did a marble shot. Do you remember him driving that Aston Martin?
Yep.
The steering wheel fell off. He left the handbrake on. Of course, we had the owner of this hugely expensive restored car who was looking apoplectic by the time... You know,
yeah.
He may be Bond in the movies, but when it comes to driving, I tell you. Now, this is actually the casino, remember? This mm-hmm. was the big shot we did in the real casino.
That's right. I always think this is the most expensive shot in the film because it took, you know, we had to do it at night. It was turnaround. We only had one shot we could do.
That's correct.
So
12
it took 2 days,
night, was it?
Yeah.
They wouldn't let us in until 12 at night. And then, and then we went up and did that shot craning up behind the with them and the Ferrari kissing.
But it, because it was in turnaround, it tossed 2 days. So that it's
Now look at Peter Lamont's work here. It's match. It's seamless, really. This stuff.
That's right. He duplicated everything from the original casino.
Yes. So apart from the one shot we were pointed out earlier, all of this is studio, and it all cuts in.
You know, this is one of the first things we shot. This sequence here, and I saw the rushes, and then very soon Terry, because he cuts so fast, had it all cut together. When I saw this. I knew that Pierce was going to be James Bond. There was no doubt about it, and that he was going to be accepted.
Yeah, you remember we did the test scene on this?
Yeah.
We did a test scene with the various girls to play the scene and so forth. And we learned a few pointers from that. But you know, it's a scene I thought was it's a scene I love this. And it's,
it really introduces Bond in a great way. And it's
Now, interestingly, that pair of bosoms you can see behind, I think it's probably Miss Venezuela. Do you remember they brought in everybody from
I think she'd won a contest from License to Kill where she was entitled to be in the next movie, so 6 years later it paid off.
A little older perhaps, but there she is. The second unit shot a lot of the close-ups of the card stuff, by the way, all this kind of slots in, and they picked up these shots of the cards being turned, all of which is very essential, I think, to
Yeah, do you remember all the questions we had about the numbers we should put on and everything? There's actually the symbolism here. She comes in and it's 00.
Oh, that's right.
Seven.
That's right.
So she actually has 007, and he turns over 006.
That's right. And the interesting thing, remember I got you to rehearse them? I couldn't. I knew nothing about the game. So Michael, I. sat down for hours with them, teaching them the game and the way to handle the cards and so forth. I know nothing about gambling, least of all that game, but you did all the rehearsals.
Except making movies, which is a game.
Yes.
I like the way he plays this scene.
Yes. It's kind of subtle, but it's humorous. So it's, and she does this. We've got a stroke of a cigar up on that line. She's a very clever actress, I think, Famke.
She does. She did she. This was her role. She loved it. She had a lot of fun with it.
And far more difficult, I think, to play than a lot of people would think. I mean, given what she had to do and make it convincing and funny and everything else.
Because right here, you don't know whether she's good or bad. You know.
Well, you think she's going to be the lead girl, I think, don't you? You think, God, this is going to be the Bond girl. This is going to be the woman in his life. Now, watch the way when he says the business about the number plates. Very subtle change in her performance. And she does it beautifully, you know. Dutch, of course. She's a Dutch. She lives in Los Angeles, has done for, I think, 3 or 4 years, but is Dutch.
That's right, and is putting on, although she speaks English perfectly, is putting on a good Russian accent. So.
There's one thing I can say. We had a terrific voice coach, but it has to be said that the actors themselves are, I think, unanimously good at being able to be consistent with their accents.
Excellent.
Even Checky Carrier, the Frenchman who plays Mishkin, who we'll be introduced to a little later. Oh, yes.
Up here at night. This is another night one. Colder than you'd think by looking at everybody, as I remember.
Oh, we just decided to stage this with the with a performance. You know, again, it's really, I suppose, adapting the location and this little miniature theatre, amphitheatre as such, into the scene, although it hasn't got anything to do with the scene. It's
a nice set,
it's kind of a nice set and a nice touch, and Phil, of course, lit all that with,
well, to light a harbor at night is no mean feat.
You want to talk about the famous continuity problem here?
Which eye?
Was you?
Yes. That's in, that's it's in the studio one eye and then the cross there to the other eye.
Yeah. I've never had any member of the public point it out. I'm looking for bloopers and things in that Premier magazine.
Well, I went to June and I said, June, when you shot that, June, I think he had the other eye up. I saw the rushes a couple of months ago. And oh, no, she says, we looked at the Steenbeck. You must have had it in backwards or something.
Yeah. I think you said the same to me, and I said, rubbish. And, of course, you're absolutely right. Indeed, he does have the... it was wrong eye. There was the continuity problem there. Now, interesting, this boat. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, we had a hell of a time. This was the boat that was the most modern, up-to-date frigate that the French had. And we moved heaven and earth. Tom Pevsner, who speaks French fluently and can deal with these people, went down there on several occasions and finally got them to bring it into the harbor of Monaco, which, you know, isn't even a French country.
And I think for no money. He managed to...
Nothing.
Incredibly, he got the French Navy. And not only that, the helicopter on the back.
And the helicopter in there. And we actually got to fly the helicopter within the port, which was another major. So Tom really came through on
that one. Now, I don't think any other person in the world could have done that. And, yes, this is interesting.
I just think how many times we had to deal with this, editing and cutting it.
Well, the interesting thing here is that the shadows on the back wall, which you're about to see, of course, we had two other extras, as it were, duplicating the movement at the same time on a much lower level. The set's built on rostra, actually. But if you think about where the camera is, of course, the shadows couldn't exist because the camera shadow would be there, but if you're lighting for behind the camera. But so we had two other people duplicating exactly what happens, which is just about to come up. So that their it's their shadows on the wall, not, of course, Famke's and Billy Mitchell's here. There you go.
Yeah, it was a great job, and Phil lit it brilliantly.
Yeah,
he used to be—he stirred the water here with. I remember he had little pools of water. He was using.
And what about Billy? With his—he used to have fainting spells during this.
Oh yeah, he got tired with this. That's my hand, by the way. Right?
Yes. I always my famous orgasm shot, which nobody seems to connect, but I'm sure there's a few dirty minds that do. And this is Monte Carlo, of course, which did look beautiful. We had some very nice sun here. And there's a nice little skirmish about to happen, of course, which is an example of what Simon Crane, the stunt arranger, is. Even a tiny skirmish, he seems to give it imagination and so forth. And this is why.
This is all tied up nicely between looking out the window, seeing this. It's all all very economical in the way it's narrated.
A very Bond moment coming up, I think. Mm-hmm. I can imagine Sean Connery doing this without any problem at all. You know, it's sort of equivalent to the throwing the flowers over the body, which...
So now we got on board this ship and got to shoot on it for 3 days. They were really great.
They were very, very helpful. And I had a lot of security restrictions, you know, given that we were
and
here.
And the band. We actually had the band. You know, always a big problem, by the way, on what music to play and have the right to play it.
And here we are. And in fact, the person you're about to see, in fact, is a member of the crew, isn't he?
Yes. He was the public
relations man.
Office,
and we suddenly realized we need an extra actor, so dragged him in, and here he is, doing his performance. So that was... we were lucky to get someone, you know, who was capable of doing it. Now we're back in the studio, of course, for this scene.
It's a nice moment. He almost gets a good laugh.
Yeah.
I think it's the look on the face.
It's the face. Which just remember on the... that's right, and then off he goes into the harbour, the sun going. We had to shoot this very fast.
We didn't have a big schedule.
I mean, first of all, the boat was going to go, I think, after, what, 2 or 3 days? We had to shoot all that. All the stuff on the launch took a day, and boy, were we hard-pressed on
it. Boy, I remember you getting these guys with the boat going right. Do you remember that?
Oh, God, don't tell me.
Trying to get that guy's cue with his speech.
Oh, God, yes, yeah. But, of course, you never see it on the film. You never see the problems.
Well, it's unconsciously people realize it, don't they?
Now, interesting, of course, Pamka can't whistle like
these
most
are our two stuntmen.
I think it was the assistant editor who put that whistle in the end.
Yeah, it's Simon Crane himself.
That's the stunt on the right. Yes, Simon on the right. And there she is. We're about to complicate the plot a little bit here. As the helicopter is stolen. There he is. Those two, by the way, those two names happen to be neighbours of mine. I live in the south of France, so those two names come from them. And the French dub was so awful, you could hardly hear them. Here we go, here's the helicopter taking off. Now, this is the Tiger helicopter. Do you want to say something about that?
Yeah, that was the experimental helicopter that was Aerospatiale's German-French helicopter. There was only one of these that was actually working, and it was worth about $100 million. So the idea of getting this for us was quite a major feat, and another one that Tom Pesner managed. We had the helicopter do a complete loop-de-loop, by the way.
Which we cut out simply because it seemed to hold up the action.
But it's amazing to see it.
Let's talk about, we'll come to this afterwards, but Derek Medding's model work, see, that is a model.
All the exterior here is a model with a real size, a foreground that is full-sized, which we'll see a little later.
Yes, and once the scene is over, actually. Now, you remember my histrionics in this scene?
Oh, yeah.
When
when we just saw that was that the... We saw the dog team outside and we saw it inside.
Yes, connecting.
So getting
two.
All that up and running, getting a panning with this was all the major.
But the do you remember trying to get the video to work? I mean, this was shot very early on. I think one of the first days in the studio, this was shot.
Yeah, because Pierce had hurt his hand and we had to reschedule everything. So we had this, everything without him, we had to shoot.
Yeah, amazingly, he cut accidentally. He had sort of grabbed a towel rail, I think, getting out of the bath and cut the tendon in his little finger. And now, of course, with the insurance company, that meant that all the action scenes as such would have to be scheduled later so his finger would be better. And hence all the dialogue scenes were brought forward. This was the first day, I think, in the studio.
That's right. Alan Cumming was doing his bit.
Doing his bit and trying to get all these damn computers up and running.
And we just got Isabella, just a matter of 2 months before.
Yeah,
I mean, she
is a real find.
We had to actually find her on a set where she was playing the part of a boy.
I think what had happened
was
Debbie McWilliams, the casting director, had gone to every country in the world. Yeah. Very nearly, hadn't she? And she finally said, the only country in Europe I haven't been to is Sweden. So, in desperation, she went to Sweden, and look who she turned up with.
Yeah,
she's wonderful.
She's Polish and was raised in Sweden and was a pop singer, actually.
I think she had a gold record, didn't she? Someone said that not in Sweden, I think it was. Mm-hmm. But
and really a delightful
as a person, way, absolutely wonderful. Worked very hard and, well, you can see how she looks. She looks absolutely fabulous. So
I'm not going to tell you.
She's going to go a long way, I think, this girl. Let me guess. And again, computers, from a director's point of view, are an absolute bloody nightmare because, first of all, they never work properly. And actually, like all films, everyone is in kind of learning process. And,
and
we quickly got this right, didn't we? Do you remember you dived in and
got
other people in the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, the problem was that we had, we were doing this on video, and later in the film when we started, we actually did it on computer resolution, which gave us a much better resolution.
And when we get to the
a lot of it's been reshot.
Situation room, for example, all of that worked like a dream. So mm-hmm. It was absolutely terrific. Now you're about to see, it's quite interesting, the next scenes, the exterior of this establishment is a real tribute to Derek Meddings, I think.
Absolutely.
I mean, none of this is location. None.
No. It's all on the back lot.
All on the back lot, and it's Derek's models. There is no... See, this is all model. That's all model behind.
Yeah, it's all in perspective, so those things are nearer than they look, but they're smaller.
Now, the helicopter shots that you'll see in a second, now this is all model. Now, the next wide shot you see, which is this one, all model. Mm-hmm. None of that is for real. This is all done near the... everything is model.
And this was a big wheel they had built.
That's right, which was on a forklift truck we dropped in front of it. That's model you see there, which is... now we had the full-size one, which...
it was just a model, wasn't it?
The physical effects did a model, but it was a damn good model. It was...
the prop worked and everything.
Far better one than Air Special had, actually, I would say.
That's right. They gave us their mock-up, but it wasn't very convincing.
No.
This, I think, is a tribute to Peter Lamont. I mean, he really... These are all Russian things. We brought them back. The art department brought them back.
Yeah.
And put the whole kitchen made out of... Russian style, and it looks very much like the type of thing you'd find in Russia.
Yes, sort of slightly sort of, I don't know, bland, sterile and so forth, and he's got the look and
very
that,
well used. You
know. Yep, and that kind of concrete effects and so forth, the very kind of Russian.
And the way he's done this, he made it on that heavy concrete and everything, it's very convincing.
Yeah.
General, if I'd known, I'd have been ready.
And now I think in this scene we learn exactly what this man's about and indeed what Famke's about.
Now I remember you with this, getting this golden eye to open.
Yes, I'll tell you now, 21 takes it. See it on my memory.
And I remember you finally kicking the video monitor wheels of the trolley and... Phil Mayhew came over and said, wait, that's my equipment. Go kick something in special effects. They're the ones that want to
Well, it's open by hand, this thing. And now, given it's a Bond film, of course, you want the motion to be absolutely perfect. Of course, we finally get it on take 21 or whatever it is. And we pick up the fried egg, I used to call it, right? Which is, of course, the golden eye, right?
Mm-hmm. That was a complicated shot, by the way, to get that reflection of him walking across. It was
good. This is a shot I always like. It's quite a shock when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
She shows the true colors, yeah.
Well, you're extremely good at this narrative stuff, all in one shot. You know, you see it all happen.
Now, this is interesting here about her orgasmic reaction to all. Neither of us thought we'd get this through. In fact, we shot a safety of all this, remember?
Yeah.
Just in case the sensors...
But his reaction is brilliant.
It's like,
he doesn't...
It's one thing to blow up the world, it's another to work with this crazy woman, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Now remember this business, the laser and all that, but remember the machine broke down that was projecting the map. Do you remember?
Oh, yes,
oh,
yes.
Oh, boy,
yes.
Did we have a nightmare. They were up all night doing this.
That's right.
I was thinking, are we going to have to walk away from this set? Oh, God. We had nothing else to go to, but it all worked.
They all worked, and didn't we go into film instead of, remember we experimented? What we did do was that we did experiment with the stuff before we started, so we did have...
Yeah, we couldn't use a real video thing. We actually went to film. We took and this is all animated on film.
That's right. All animated on film, so we could just do it over and over again, and it was...
But the projector broke down.
That's right. And there was only one in England.
Yes.
Am I right? Was that the... And given we'd already moved everything because of Pierce's fingers, it didn't leave us a hell of a lot to... didn't leave us
No.
Much to anywhere to go, really.
Now, this is all Derek Meddings' stuff with the earth turning behind, and he was great at that. He painted all that himself, all the sky on the earth and there. It's all made up of different elements. You know.
Yeah. I was talking to Richard Donner about his work. Of course, he did Superman, and I think he won an Academy Award for it, but he said that he thought Derek was way in above one of the best model makers in the world. He said he's really instinctive.
Instinctive and practical and very artistic. Yeah. Remember this? This is right. This is a cutout.
Do you want to talk about the cutouts?
Well, he just painted cutouts.
They're just plywood cutouts, those planes. Yeah, marvelous.
So, well, I mean, somebody was going to have us go to Russia and shoot it and all that
stuff. Yeah, we actually investigated that possibility.
I know. It was a fortune to do all that.
And you'll see when the planes take off, again, Derek comes to the fore with that. They're all models. So, here she is, right? There she is having another orgasm, so off they go. Now, this is interesting. This is a line, you know, that never really worked. Nobody laughed at it.
It might be the music came in over the top.
Maybe
of
it is. It's a corny line. It's a corny line, and normally that kind of corny line in Bond gets a laugh. It didn't. I think she delivers it correctly, but it never got the laugh, so obviously something didn't work. Now, here again, that's the that we did a crane on it. Now, this is Derek Meddings again. Heading off into the sunset. That's the all model that. Here we go. Now the jet's taking off.
That's at Leavesden. That's our little. That's our air tower at the.
And those
the
are models again.
Yep. All three models. Here we are at night. Remember getting the bus? It was a fortune to get a bus to come by, and they broke down. And finally, we just shot a bus in the street.
That's right. Yes, which we should have done in the first place. Now this is Moneypenny, of course. The essential thing we decided was to. Keep the characters going from the old Bond.
Yeah, but and Samantha Bond here has a real interesting kind of very classy but very sort of
interesting dynamic she has in terms of Bond.
She has a way of dealing with the humor, you know.
Yeah.
Giving him as good as he gives. Yeah. What would I ever
do without you? Which is generally a theme throughout the movie. The women do give him a pretty tough time throughout it. And it was one of the things that we talked about, you know, when we were discussing the script. And I think it was one of the things that you and I wanted was to make the women a little tougher, a little more independent, a little more aggressive and, you know, in all departments. And, of course, I think that comes through in the film. Now, all this computer stuff, again, was actually computer this time, not video. Mm-hmm. We'd learned our lesson by this particular scene.
Yeah, this was there's 9 videos, there are 12 videos.
And by the way, that building you saw establishing this place was the real MI6 in London, the real building. And here we are establishing the helicopter and so forth, which is there. And of course, the
and here she is, Judi Dench. You know, when that this is what really made that was the idea. Bruce said that you said to him, "Why don't you try M as a woman? Try that out." And he did, and it really it worked on paper. But I still was somewhat dubious. But Barbara found Judi Dench, and when she brought her in, and I began to see it all come together.
Yeah, well, actually, I think John Kelly at UA said something about we'd decided on a woman, and although you'd need a little bit of convincing because it was stepping outside of you know what had gone before, it was a kind of brave decision, I think. But I remember John Kelly saying, well, if you do get a woman, get a star, get someone who's terrific. And I think it was Barbara's idea to get Judi Dench. I think she's fantastic, and this is a relationship that in future Bonds, of course, has a ways to go, I think, which is, you know, it's got somewhere to go, which will be good. Now, this is computers and models and things, that one. This is... I always thought Isabella looked slightly strange in this shot when she comes. It sort of looked like Isabella for some reason. I don't know, it's the trick of the camera.
This one that took a while.
Wow,
all that digital stuff.
Yep.
Now we're getting a lot of the digital work we do in the film, which was...
Yep. Now, the stuff coming up with the weapon firing, that took an awful lot of... to decide on how many in terms of the electrics. We all contributed to this, I have to say. Everyone had an opinion, and it was our biggest worry. Do you remember?
Right. It was... You know, it has to be an atomic explosion outside the atmosphere, so... And to be convincing about it, and yet let everybody see... kind of see this effect and see it in a way that they kind of understand what happens. And then remember this, it was all over, you think it's over, and suddenly the electrical stuff starts.
I suppose the fire may, of course, keep these things simple. Now, here is interesting. Obviously, this is all
that's
digital.
That's her.
Isabella.
That's the double.
That was this double going over.
But all that stuff towards camera is her.
Yeah, and we blew the place up like this, of course, and the electrical effects were added afterwards. And very good electrical effects they are, too. But hell, do you remember that day? I love directing explosions because you get five cameras, you point it at them, and you say, fire. you undercrank every camera, and I'm sorry, you overcrank every camera, and it's all over in about a second and a half.
I hope it works.
Yeah. Now, this, by the way, for the airline version got cut out. Interestingly, anything to do with explosions.
They didn't want to know about
planes. They don't want the planes. So if you see the airline version, well, you know.
Remember that? You wanted that to be like the Hill aircraft explosion, where the two of them hit together.
Like Farnborough, where the Russian plane blew up for real. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was just after they hit, then they a few seconds later they blew up.
That's right, rather than just the conventional sort of moment of impact type explosion. Here again, here she is, she trips up.
That's right, the steam pipes force her out. And this is our stunt girl. My heart went out to her with this one.
My God. It's terrifying, isn't it? God, dear, oh dear. Again, Derek, of course, you can see there doing this great work. Now, this is a scene I like. I think Isabella's particularly good in it, but the effect that's about to happen to come up. Do you remember? We were all there was no take two on this. It either worked the first time or I don't know what we would have done. But
above the set, they had built in this thing from the very beginning.
So weeks before
it was like
a
sword of Damocles hovering over the whole set. And I was hoping it wasn't going to come through before we needed it.
And we had to put Isabella in the scene, as you'll see in the shot. You know, it's the and of course it's based around the idea you hear these creaking noises, but you know, it's the old story. It's like the shark seeing the man's head and jaws. Really, you let the audience relax, then you hit them right in the mouth. That's the sort of concept, but it was a hell of an effect, and it did work extremely well, I think, the first time. I mean, Terry's cut the hell out of it, you know. I think it falls about seven times, doesn't it?
Well, it takes a long time to get down. Yeah.
No,
there she is.
There she is, actually standing there when it happened.
Yeah.
And your heart's in your mouth for all that stuff.
That shot was always odd, right?
Yeah, well, it's odd because her hair looks odd. That's the point, I think. She always looks really... She looks like the Mad Witch from...
I remember he had a lot of trouble getting that camera. It was a crane camera.
It was an 11 or 12. So the operator had had a lot of difficulty doing it. And it was a very tricky shot for him, actually, to be honest. It was very tricky. Craning down and panning up at that speed. Now, this is great here. This is all we shot for real. Now, the next shot you see is, in fact, Derek Meddings, double, and that's all to do with digital effects and...
Great shot. Michael Kitchen's always good, isn't he? I mean, he was good for this part.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, it's a very dry part as written, I think. There's always the technician that knows it all and has to tell the audience what's going on, or at least, you know, offer up what's going on. And Michael Kitchen's an actor who I think brings a much, you know, adds a whole lot more to a scene just by being such a fine actor.
One single electric light on a 30-mile radius. EMP.
Here he is. Now, Judy Dench's character M starts to come out in this.
The Americans and Soviets during the Cold War.
Again, I think Peters did a great job on the design here. It all fits that building, I think, beautifully.
Set off a nuclear device in the upper atmosphere.
And her office, I think, is absolutely perfect as well. This, by the way, for those that don't know, in America, Dame Judy Dench is probably England's best actress, I think, in terms of... She does a lot of theatre at the Royal Shakespeare Company, the National Theatre.
I just saw her in a little light music before I...
Oh, is she good?
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. She's just wonderful.
She is a wonderful actress.
She got 2 awards this year.
I'm very nervous, by the way, about doing this scene. It was interesting. We were very nervous about even asking her to do the scene, if you remember. Mm-hmm. Thinking, oh my God, Dame Judi Dench. And she said she was terrified about doing it because it was Bond. So it was a very funny thing, and she admitted it to me when we were actually shooting the scene. Her daughter was on set all the time we were shooting as well. Flinty, who was
This infrared effect, which is, I think, very convincing.
Yes, so do I. I think it's really good. I think people will be amazed as to how... that, I think, is the effect supervisor with a sheet over his head. I think that's how they did that. But...
Wasn't it Morrow? Was it Morrow?
It was Morrow.
Yeah, it was
Morrow Bryant,
the visual effects supervisor.
That's it.
Who was... coordinated all of the digital effects shots.
We're very lucky to get Chris Corbolt, who was doing the practical and pyrotechnic effects. Mm. He was assistant to John for many years doing the Bond films, and this is his first job. This became a terrific scene, didn't it? A much talked about scene.
Yeah, the often quoted the. Misogynist dinosaur line.
Yes, that seems to be probably the most quoted line in the film. And
he plays it just right. He has a nice sense of... he keeps his cool in this.
Yeah, but she... The great thing about her is that she you know... And there's a marvellous reaction at the end of the scene, which, mm-hmm. you know, she's very tough in the scene. She lays it on the line. She doesn't pull her punches. On the other hand, at the end of the scene, you realise, of course, that she... does feel for him and understands just how difficult and how dangerous the job he's got to do is. So.
Mm-hmm. But she's no nonsense. Isn't she?
Yes. Mm.
And it's based on...
But not hard, I don't think.
It's based on Stella Remington, who was actually the head of MI6.
Is she still the head of MI6?
She's resigned.
Oh, she's resigned.
3 years during the time we filmed it, she was there.
Yeah.
And so this was really in keeping with the reality of who was boss.
Yeah, yeah. No immediate threat and wasn't worth fighting. Yes, and he's got the right sense of, you get a real sense that these two are at loggerheads with one another, and that there's a real kind of tension in the air between them. And the great thing about this scene was, I think it answers, you know, we had a lot of what I think is negative press in England about, well, is Bond washed up, is it, you know, is it something that we should never have started, and so on and so forth. And in a funny way, this scene sort of answered it for them. Do you know what I mean? Someone else addressed them as a sexist, misogynist dinosaur.
Well, we faced the fact that the Cold War was over and that the Berlin Wall was down. We faced that straight on and said, okay, what's going to happen afterwards?
Yeah.
What's Russia like? What is the world like?
Absolutely. I want you to find GoldenEye. Yes, now we're just coming up to that reaction I was talking about. She tells them to go out and do it. Guilty or not, I don't want you running off on some kind of... Yeah, very strong performance. See how still she is. I mean, they both are, actually. Stillness is a very powerful element on screen. One thing you'll notice with British actors is they don't wave their hands around like American actors tend to all the time.
Yeah.
Now, just watch this reaction. He goes, and just that look down. You see, that says it all.
Here we are in St. Petersburg, looking at the Winter Palace there.
And that was a band that we, of course, hired and so forth. And were you there? Did you go out with, or was this Barbara?
Barbara did all that stuff on the second unit there.
This, of course, is shot in London, this particular...
This is the Draper's Hall.
Now, of course, for those that are interested, one of the extras here, probably the one you'll see overacting wildly, is in fact our producer, the one talking to you now. So I should point him out. And
you gave me a couple of close-ups, I know.
Well, I had to. I mean, it was political. God help me if you'd seen Russia's the next day and I hadn't given you that. It's a scene I like this very much.
Ormov,
Mishkin.
Ormov's very good here. And this is, of course, the first time... You see, Checky Carrier, who's a wonderful French actor.
Yes,
one of my favorites.
Yeah, he, I think La Balance he was in, which there's Michael on the left. You can see, very good actor. Odd enough, the French have more difficulty with the Russian accent. Simply to overcome the French accent is very difficult. But he did a great job, and it's a scene I like enormously. very well played by everybody. Lovely location in the centre of the city of London. That's the financial area in London.
Yeah, I like his reaction when he says, right here, when he says, what are this?
No, he's, and what about the other two, he says.
Yeah. Now the plot thickens.
And it's great getting these actors from Europe instead of the, you know, the actors that we've seen many times before. These are new and different and, you know, known on the continent, of course. But
and also they have some significance in each one of their territories.
That's
which
true.
Is nice. You know, they come and they support the picture.
Very much. And good editing by Terry Rawlings here as well. I mean, he has a real instinct, Terry, for this stuff. Cuts very fast. I'd shoot a scene one night. I'd look at the dailies, on one particular night. The next night, the whole scene was cutting together.
Ah, yes. Now, here we have the one of the oldest characters in the film and also one of the longest-running characters, Mike.
Everybody loves Q. He is our ambassador of goodwill. Everywhere we go... he's there to promote the film and show his gadgets. He's got a lot of the original gadgets, you know. He goes around with them, the original briefcase and all that.
And actually, one of the great things is, of course, that when you come to write a scene like this, everybody's got ideas as to what the gags are. And in fact, I think the first gag that we have, which is in the telephone booth, which is you'll see very shortly, I think that was thought up by Chris Corbolt in special effects. Mm-hmm. So everybody wants to kind of contribute to the gags for this thing. He's what, 80 years old now?
Oh yes, very, very close to it. Needs a little help with the cue cards occasionally, but
yes, I know that. I know that. He's also hopeless at gadgets. I mean, you've probably in the press read about that, but he genuinely is. I mean, he's quite clumsy, and he's the first to admit it, actually.
He used to be all thumbs.
All thumbs. He's absolutely right. Of course he's all thumbs. But it's a scene I really enjoyed doing, and it was interesting also that the everyone forgot about Pierce, and most of the crew rushed to have their photograph taken with Desmond during this.
Here we are, here's the telephone.
Yes, this is the telephone gag, I think, that Chris Corbolt thought up.
Yeah, this scene tends to build from one thing to another, and it's they're all slightly thrown away, so they're not, you don't have to dwell upon them, so they kind of has a nice breezy feel about it.
Yeah, and it's a scene I always used to look forward to most when Bond films was the Q scene. He really established a kind of terrific following with the character that you know, he became.
Well, he's always gives Bond a difficult time.
Yes, he doesn't like Bond at all.
No respect.
No respect. That always got a big laugh, the guy being wheeled out, just throw a gag in the background. I think he blows more things up in this movie than any previous Bond movie. Everything seems to end up in flames and rubble.
There goes the girl, waiting there in the background, patiently.
Actually, it's interesting. Funny gag, though, it was, of course, that she actually injured herself on that take. That was take three, and although not really badly, it certainly hurt, and she was bandaged, I think, for 2 or 3 days.
This is all done out at the horse?
This is all done at Ascot Races. Is done out at the new the stands, the new building that they built out there, and we converted this to St. Petersburg Airport, put up the signage and so forth.
And to get the three-dimensionality in the set, all the reverses are done a little farther along down the way.
Yes.
Because it has no reverse here at all.
There is no reverse. There's just the building.
Just a lot of...
Absolutely. And, of course, we introduced Joe Don Baker. Well, he's one of the few characters, of course, that's been in a previous Bond film, I think, playing a villain, wasn't he?
That's right. He was in The Living Daylights. He was the villain in that one.
Yeah, well, of course...
That had happened with Charles Gray, of course. He'd appeared as our man in Japan, and then appeared as Diamonds Are Forever as Blofeld. So there is it does happen occasionally in the Bond film.
But also he's kind of, I suppose he replaces the Felix Leiter character in a way. You know, it's this is what he is. He's the CIA contact, and he looks very seedy and kind of down at heel and so forth. But it's very funny, and Joe himself actually is extremely good at comedy and so forth. I mean, given that all his earlier roles, like Walking Tall and so forth, he was playing a very tough, kind of hard character. I think it's a kind of revelation to just what a good actor he is.
Well, you had him, too, in your miniseries.
In my miniseries, Edge of Darkness, yeah. And again,
he
played
excellent there.
Humorous role in that, yeah.
Here's Isabella down there. This was done in at Pancras Station.
Pancras Station in London, yeah. And this, again, was...
The Courtauld Institute. We use that in
again in London, and the reason, of course, was that in St. Petersburg, we felt that, you know, apart from number crunching time in terms of the budget, the other reason simply was the damage or the problems that we might encounter in St. Petersburg in terms of the bureaucracy and so forth.
Yeah, and it was also the danger. I mean, everyone who went there, Barbara took this whole second unit there to do the tank chase stuff and some of the establishing shots, everyone had to have a bodyguard with them all the time. It was high risk for us to go there.
Yes, and it's interesting also, of course, that the upcoming tank chase, which is a little bit into the future, but when that happens, of course, we'll discuss it more at the time. It was originally all set in St. Petersburg, and most of it we shot back at the lot for the same reason we did this.
Valentin Dmitrovich Sokoski?
Yeah.
Anyway, the second unit shot all of the, you know, all of the stuff actually shot in St. Petersburg, and we slotted in.
This was on our, down here on our set, and back at the...
Yes, again, Peter Lamont built a terrific set for St. Petersburg, the long street, of which you just saw a small section of there. And we had the wider shots of St. Petersburg, which you'll see a little later on, but... that was all done by the second unit, and we slotted all this in.
Yeah, it was 560 feet long, that train.
That's right, incredible. I bet we could never have done without it, to be honest, and it probably would have cost us 10 times as much had we shot it in St. Petersburg.
And we never were quite sure about the political stability and what cooperation we were going to get or not get when we actually got there.
Yes, I think in retrospect it was the single best decision we ever took was probably that, I think. Here we are back on the computer screens.
Yeah, now we're getting into computer screens that we're using actual...
I think in the final cut, this was one of the sections of in the middle of the movie that we did quite a lot of tightening.
Yeah, we tightened this up. We had an extra scene in here, which we...
That's right, and what we felt was that the narrative seemed to be going on too long, seemed to hold things up. So this, I remember the first cut being like about 141 minutes, something like that. Mm-hmm. And we took 12 minutes out anyway from that cut. We previewed it, took 12 minutes out, and that was the final length of the film. This is St. Petersburg,
yeah,
obviously.
And remember this narrative, this... voiceover, we had Bruce come back and write, because we did cut some stuff out, and I was going to tighten it up.
That's correct, yes.
By linking it with that this voiceover.
Exactly, and the thing was to simplify Bond's, the way in which he extracts himself from Valentine's clutches in the next scene.
Are you sure you want to do this? The last guy who dropped in uninvited went home air freight. Very small boxes.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with the writers on this one. Bruce Feirstein was the last one we had, and they were all great. You know,
yes, it was a long process, but like most films, I think in all there were four, weren't there?
Yeah,
the four writers.
Michael France came in with a good story and screenplay, and from there we had Jeffrey Kane come in. He really sort of pulled it together, and basically the narrative elements in the story were all put in by Jeffrey, and then Kevin Wade was on for a while, and Bruce came in and really spent a lot of time with us, sort of. And you?
Well, I think we all... I remember it was an interesting process, because actually after the Michael France draft, I think we sat down for what must have been close on 3 months, wasn't it?
Mm.
Or 2 months, certainly, of just discussing the plot and, you know,
Tightening it up
and putting together all the... basically coming up with a treatment from which Jeffrey could work.
And a lot of these scenes, it's interesting when you see scenes, how different writers have sort of put grace notes in and worked them out.
Yes, absolutely. Now, this is interesting because here we have Robbie Coltrane, who's probably well known in England as a comedian, also for a series called Cracker, which is a superb series where he plays a prison psychologist. And he's kind of playing a comic straight role here, but he is a terrific actor. And he really makes the scene sing. I think Pierce is terrific in this scene as well. We shot this very early on, if you remember. It was one of our first scenes that we actually shot.
And this is Minnie Driver. She's has a nice career going for herself.
Yes, she's
very funny. And Robbie is wonderful, though. He has an ability to be humorous and menacing at the same time, and it's just perfect for this type of a villain.
Yeah, no, he's absolutely terrific. And if you see Cracker, the series he does, he's won, I think, the BAFTA Award, that's the English equivalent of the Academy Award, 3 years in a row for that series. But this terrible rendition of that song.
Yeah, we had to get a good singer. Remember, you said we've got to get a good singer who can knows how to sing badly.
Yeah, you have no point in getting just someone to sing badly because it just won't work. Yeah.
And Minnie Driver is actually a very good singer.
She is a good singer. And you remember we recorded this? Yeah. Were you there at the recording?
Yes, I remember.
Oh, yeah.
We were at, it was at the Snake Ranch.
That's
the,
right, in Chelsea in London.
Chelsea.
And we had varying degrees of badness, if you remember. We thought, oh my God, that's too bad. But actually, it's a terrible version of it. And
but it's the whole idea of what would happen in Russia, you know, imitating Western ideas and having CD clubs. It's
yes.
The way the new Russia is.
That's when you go over there, of course. Was there. One of the unfortunate things was we had to cut a little bit of, there's an earlier scene than this, wasn't there, about what sets Robbie up as an arms dealer, or Valentine up as an arms dealer, which was a terrific scene in itself, but with the restructuring of the centre of the movie, it just tended to hold the movie, you know, and I think it was the right decision. I think
yeah.
It feels right to me.
So why did you not kill me? Call it professional courtesy.
Pierce holds his own, though. He was in this scene because it's. I think he was pleased that we had a lot of solid actors that he could play against, and it enhances him.
It certainly enhances him, and I think the being very early on the schedule, I think he was. He was very nervous about this. And I remember you standing next to me and we're at the monitor and I was doing a lot of takes on this to get the performance because he was nervous. He was edgy about, he was obviously worried about, like most actors, when he's taking over a role like this, of actually doing it properly. He's a very conscientious actor.
Absolutely. And I think coming up here is one of the best delivered lines he has where he says, not our finest hour.
Yes, which is great.
He really played it perfectly.
Yes. He certainly knows how to make an entrance, and if you notice, he turns his head for the line, so he just strengthens it a touch when he says it. Also, Robbie, on these big kind of expository speeches about the Yalta Agreement and how the British betrayed, he does it brilliantly.
He wraps it very far.
Yes, he makes it interesting, and he paces that those speeches through, and I think that's important. It certainly keeps the interest up. But pacing a scene is very important like this to make sure that the scene is not too slow.
Yeah.
I think contrary to what people tell you, I don't think you can actually speed a scene like this up in editing. It just doesn't work. It's got to be in the playing of the scene. And I'll often time scenes very carefully, and then I'll always look to my script girl and say, what was the length of that scene? And if we're running 2 or 3 seconds slow, then I'll pick that pace up when we do the next take.
Now, this is a nice Peter Lamont set.
This one
was great.
Yeah, beautiful set.
It's all built out, 360 degrees, big pool up on rostrums. All the detailing was taken off an actual Turkish bath in Russia.
Of course, the tragedy was we were desperately looking for another scene to play in it, if you remember, because it was such a nice set and all this effort and work. And all I could feel was that, my God, here's this wonderful set. Is there any other scene we can play in it? Unfortunately, of course, there wasn't.
But this scene does have it's a nice mixture of humor, sex, and danger, and that's kind of the...
Yes, I feel that this is a scene that really turned out, seemed to work.
We always had a problem about how well-dressed or undressed they
yes.
could be.
And how are we going to avoid the censorship problems? And it's a scene that I certainly expected trouble with, and I don't think a censor anywhere.
No.
Maybe in the Middle East, or I don't know.
Probably in Kuala Lumpur.
They're going to cut it and so forth, but... The truth is that I think we got the mixture right here, and actually it's interesting that there are a couple of shots here where, in fact, we use Bond's double and Famke's double. I think there's one coming up, the wide shot, in a second, you'll see it.
Yeah,
they're both doubles here to do this, but here she has now, they're both doubled there. Now we're back to the original pair, that's Famke and Pierce, right? And... here we go again. This is doubles, both cases. Up, watch the way she pulls them. Oh.
Yeah, now, back to the
I know people that pay money to have their legs wrapped around like that.
But there was a lot of secret desires to...
And actually, she hurt her back on this. You know,
she padded up, but she still got thrown around a lot.
And the other thing, if you remember, was Peter put rubber tiles on the wall. All
right.
of those walls are made of rubber,
mm-hmm.
so it'll take the bashing it does.
Yeah, we asked him to do that.
You know, and...
No.
I like the way she pops up. Not hurt at all, just mad.
And Bond, of course, not a hair out of place.
People love this. Now, this is great. This was... remember, Michael France actually... had said he went to a place like this when he went to Russia that had all the statues that
yeah.
would discard an old air base, and it was the inspiration for this scene, which is...
Yeah. Now, interestingly, in this scene, of course, there's a rabbit punch coming up, which we couldn't show the rabbit punch because the British censor objected and it wasn't worth doing two versions for England and America, but... ironically, I think it's almost just as vicious off-screen as it is on, but that's censorship for you. So
yeah, we had to actually go out and spend a day shooting that.
Yep, I remember that.
Little insert.
Actually, the same day we did the gun barrel again, if you remember, so it did. But I think this is a wonderful job by Peter Lamont. Here we have the far better, of course, than the one in Russia, but this eerie kind of quality to the scene, brilliantly lit, I think, by Phil Mayhew.
Yeah, Phil did a great job here, because he got that sort of, not only the lighting, but the moisture on it, to feel the kind of dampness, some mist across here.
And one of the interesting things, of course, is that in daylight it looks nothing. And yet by the time the lights are on and you've got all the shapes and the light, and it looks absolutely tremendous. And, of course, you obviously move things about for every setup, which we did. You move the statues, you find your frames, and I think it looks absolutely fabulous. And it's a scene that really remained right back from the Michael France days, didn't it?
Yeah.
The principle of the scene remained, even though the dialogue was changed.
And, all the writers took a crack at this. It was a tough scene to get right.
Yeah.
The sense of it came with Jeffrey and Bruce, Bruce contributed a lot in tweaking it.
Yeah, that's true.
Hello, James.
But it was...
It's a great entrance here.
Yes. Man. Well, it's straight out of
Trevelyan.
The film. I think Phil Mayhew, the DP, based it on The Third Man. He's, remember, with Orson Welles coming out of the, I think, the doorway, wasn't it, in The Third Man, and the light actually hits him. It's a great place to play a scene. I mean, look at it. I always like the wide shots. They're the ones that I think are terrific. They're really, really good.
And Pierce really came to this pretty much by himself, didn't he? Kind of his interpretation here.
It's very good. He does it. I think there's a lot of feeling from him, actually, in the scene. You know, the sense of betrayal, the sense of disbelief and so forth. I think he plays extremely well.
He gets, he has to react pretty much in this scene. He doesn't have a lot to say, but his reactions are crucial to making you understand how Bond's feeling about this situation.
Yes, actually, one of the funny things about the statue park, I remember on the day before shooting, one of those giant statues got stolen. Do you remember?
I remember. We always
like
wanted
20 foot high. Or
yeah,
something.
How did someone get it out past the security guard?
Well, even if they threw it over the wall, what the hell did they put it in? A pentatlon? Or, I mean, a giant, a huge truck? What?
And we had a lot of people objecting, if you remember, on the neighborhood. So we sent people out during the day. They curtained off their windows at night. They put up little sound buffers. It was because people complained about the bright lights.
That's right. Oh, God, there was a lot of complaints. Also, if you listen closely on the soundtrack, you'll probably hear birds twittering in the background. Well, of course, they were for real. I remember at 2 a.m. hearing this bird chorus. This wasn't a dawn chorus. This was an all-night chorus. And there was quite an interesting element to the soundtrack.
You know, it's interesting, now that, this was when The Scar came up, it just reminded me that Linda DeVetta was our makeup woman on this, and she did a wonderful job of creating the scar, and she made the scar up, and then she made a lot of copies of it.
That's
she kept
right.
on putting it on, and every day, so you have a similar scar. And it was real artistry to it to get the...
Also, the thing was to get the scar so it didn't deform his face too much. I remember we all laughed at the rictus smile description and the...
Knob
script.
Of an ear was also described.
Yeah.
We wondered what we were going to see. But luckily, it never got that far.
This is the final result. Yes, now this is interesting. This is the scene where he gets the dart in the neck. Well, Barbara Broccoli, who is, of course, co-produced with you, she always hated this dart scene. She always thought the dart was kind of ridiculous, and it was one of her bête noires, I think, in the movie.
But now here's the scream. This poor girl got hoarse here.
Yes, how many times do we do this? My God, she screamed and yelled and stamped and so forth, and... she came, her voice was completely wrecked at the end of this.
Yeah, this was a scene that was a little tricky. Remember when we edited the whole thing down, we put in a couple of extra little effect shots.
Yeah, actually, I'd storyboarded this scene pretty detailed, and what you see is pretty much what the storyboard's, pretty much what the storyboard contains. But it's all these missile shots that you're about to see when he realizes, of course, that the missile's going to launch. Are all digital, in fact. I mean, one of the great things with digital is the missiles will go exactly where you want them to go, and you don't have to worry. So all of that is digital.
Now, the sequence here was shot by Arthur Worcester because our regular Ian Sharp was out in Russia doing stuff. So.
And Arthur Worcester had done an awful lot of second unit direction, I think, on the previous Bonds, hadn't he?
Yes, he had. He was one of our standbys, so we got a chance to get him back and. He did a few of our things.
And here again is a combination of models, digital, real, studio, of course. And again, Derek's model. There you see
it. Oh, boy, did we have problems with the double parachute. Remember?
I think it was 33 takes in the end.
How many times we saw this thing with one parachute open, the other one didn't.
Crashing down, yes.
No. All night long, these guys would go out.
Again, that's model, what you see there, which again is incredible. Now we're back to the real thing. And here we go.
So this is the first time the Bond and Natalia meet.
That's correct. She kicks him in the shins and off she goes.
That's the first meeting there.
My only memory of all of this was I was feeling as sick as a dog during the shoot. Do you remember? It was the night I was so ill that I couldn't... And here we are, these wonderful Russian jeeps that none of them worked. So everyone, I think, broke down that particular night.
I think we had six, we end up with four.
Yes. They collapsed and broke.
Now here we are in Russia. This is, and it cuts it together nicely. And the same.
It's a very interesting facade. This is in St. Petersburg, this particular shot. And very eerie, kind of stark-looking building.
And again... Peter Lamont is his best here.
Yeah, wonderful set. This is
trying to feel like an underground cavern based upon some places we actually visited.
Yes, he visits an awful lot of these locations in Russia, and this whole sense of the cell here, I thought, looked marvelous. And it's a very good scene as well. It's a scene between them both that I think it works extremely well.
I don't know
And Isabella really came through here. Yeah. You know, it's, you're always a bit nervous when you get someone that doesn't have too much experience. But I remember we read her. You were watching. I read the part of Bond when we first met her, and it was amazing. She had good eye contact.
Very much so, yeah. And also, it's a scene we test a lot of other actresses on, this one, wasn't it? This was the sort of key scene because, you know, it's quite an emotional scene for her, and it's quite a difficult scene for anybody to play. And I think we had 4 or 5 actresses test for this part, and this was the scene we used.
Of course, for a Bond lady, she doesn't have much wardrobe change. She went through most of the picture in the film.
That's absolutely right.
It's the first time.
So the short skirt, of course, was... I mean, we've got the beach scene coming up. There's that famous crutch shot that I like so much that Terry Rawlings insisted stayed in the movie, and I backed him up 100%. But beyond that, the this outfit, I think, was on, you know, apart from the Kenzo coach you found in... Yeah, on that sledge in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, she was on half the picture in this.
Lovely lighting. I think Phil did fabulous
job. Wonderful.
In this
scene. I remember talking about it in the day. So, well, I want it to. Dawn's coming up. I want to have low slant lighting in this room. Good morning, Mr. Bond. Very chiaroscuro. It's great.
Now, this is a terrific scene. I think it's a good scene because it's nice to see Bond get riled up. These two start arguing, and she interrupts all of this and tells them what she thinks of them, and I think it's a scene I really like.
Yeah, and then when Ormov comes in, it really picks up the way he and Mishkin go at it. It's great.
We're about to sort of enter a very heavy action sequence that kind of, probably the biggest, or certainly the longest action sequence, I think, in the movie.
In the archives, remember this was in a Michael France draft, it got dropped out at one time, and finally...
I think it was you that said it should stay in, actually. Yeah, I remember even myself was saying, well, you know, do we need this? I mean, does it have to be in this? And I remember you saying, yep, I think it's a really good scene, and it proves to be a terrific scene, actually.
I think the idea that they're on top and you can fire through the walkways and all that is kind of an interesting idea.
Well, as written, of course, it was a lucite floor, wasn't it?
It's supposed to be plastic and they'd fall through.
And the complications were so great, but actually I think what we finally get in the film is just as good. It also is a very good it's a very good piece because now we really see Pierce in action, probably for the first time in any, apart from the opening sequence. He really comes into his own. Very, very good at action.
And you know, an action hero running around in a suit and tie, not something you see very often.
No, he handles himself extremely well. The point is that a lot of actors are not great at action. They're not some actors that physically look very strong are often actually not that capable when it comes to doing action. Yes, and it happens in a few seconds, I think.
Yeah. There's always a question here, did he get all the bullets out?
Yes. I remember you worrying about that, yeah. That's right. And now, of course, this is Bond being Bond. Here we go. And of course, a multitudinous soldiers come charging.
Well choreographed.
Yeah.
Simon as Crane has done a great job here.
I certainly think he's one of the best stunt arrangers in England, no question, if not the best. Does a lot of the stunts himself as well. Touch of Sam Peckinpah there about all this. Notice there are no bullet hits on anybody. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things, particularly in terms of censorship, while there's a high body count, blood is not something that
no raw liver at the camera.
Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think we barely put blood on anybody in the whole movie, quite deliberately, because the censors object to it. And I think we would have been in serious trouble if we'd put. I don't remember actually wiring anybody up for a bullet hit in the movie. I simply left it to the stuntmen to give the whole sense of, you know, in their action and so forth, to sell that to me.
This was a great complex. That was the end of Peter's Street down there, wasn't it?
That's right. Now, interestingly, what you see here was actually in the building, or a lot of it was in the building, that a real part of the building, wasn't mm-hmm. it?
These and you piles. See, and all those tanks up there, we ended up lending to Richard III. They're part of the
United III Artists. Movie. Yes, that's right. That's right.
And we got them free of charge. So I think it was a pretty low budget.
This is very interesting because it's How to Escape 10 Million Bullets, and you know, as only Bond can do, and not put a hair out of place.
And all the paper flying. Yes. That was something.
Yeah, that was. I think it was £10,000 worth of in that one. What that little sequence is just in the bullet hits alone, all the paper exploding, and so forth. I think it was like £10,000just for those hits. Yeah, it's a very exciting sequence. It was a complicated sequence to do, but it turned out extremely well. Here we see the Q belt in action. I love those sort of Errol Flynn things. Round they go through the roof. And that was Simon Crane himself actually doing that stunt.
That's right. And then this is the Pierce, though.
That's Pierce,
a pretty
of course.
Good jumper yeah. up there and running around here.
He's also very...
he is very active, isn't he?
He's very active, and he also punishes himself. By that, he wants to get it right, and... you know, if you say do it again, that's not good enough to him. He'll respond to that. You know, I could show him on the video and he would go back and do it again. I don't ever remember him once, or perhaps there's one point in the story later on which I'll point out where he got really fed up. But beyond that, no, I don't blame him. Actually, he had for a good cause.
Now we're coming up with this shot. If you remember,
oh my God,
we had that tank took an hour, took 1 mile to get up to speed on that airport we were at.
Yeah,
and you'd listen to it coming for a minute and a half and wondering if the car and the tank were going to be in the shot at the same time. Had to be timed perfect.
Absolutely, and they would come and we'd all be waiting tensely and everyone would be silent. We'd hear the rumbling get closer and closer, and of course suddenly Simon would yell cut because it was half a second out. I mean, if it hit that car, then people would be dead. So
early and it was a danger, too late and it was out of frame. It was really a perfect job. I think we'd had 5 run-ups before we finally did it because we could only do it once.
Yeah.
Now, this is great between the street we had and St. Petersburg. And
well, it's faultless, really, in terms of you simply can't tell, but I mean...
I think Barbara was down there 2 weeks with the crew.
That's right.
And Sharp and people. And
quite clearly really what you're about to see, this business with the canals, which will happen after the sequence, that is all shot in St. Petersburg.
I know, and that was a rough street. That street had on the Japanese embassy, the French embassy, the Pushkin Museum, the mayor's house, and how they let us... well, of course, they did object, but it's amazing we were able to shoot on this street.
I know. Incredible. And it's a lovely stunt coming up. I thought Simon did a fantastic job with this. I mean, I certainly wouldn't have liked to have done it. And that one hits that one, the whole thing blows up. I mean, it's...
Yeah, they're good. Well, the Russians have great stunt fellows. I mean, all these guys here are stuntmen when they hit them on the bridge.
No, that's right. Yes, they're all Russian. They're all Russian.
They're great. Yeah.
But also, I think the technical people involved in the picture, the people who organized the locations, I thought were pretty terrific, weren't they?
Oh, yeah.
I
mean, we had good Russian support out there. We had Phil Kohler out there, who's been on all the tough locations for us over the years.
Well, he's the British location manager.
Right. And so it...
And negotiation was a long process, and obviously there was a hell of a lot of red tape to get through. And even then, when you got the permission, that didn't guarantee anything, to be honest,
no,
did it? In terms of, I mean, on the day, anything could happen, didn't it?
But it turned out wonderfully well. Of course, I don't think we... Well, I think in the retrospect, though, we were happy it was a shorter... We didn't take the whole first unit out there.
No, I think it was...
It could have been a disaster.
Yeah. Yes, there's quite a lot of mass destruction in this, of course.
But no one gets killed. I think that was an important decision to make.
Yes, I think you're right. Nobody gets killed, of course, is a complete mystery.
Well, you know, it's supposed to be a sort of funny... You know, you're supposed to have fun in the chase.
Yeah.
And if you see someone actually killed, it kind of spoils your fun.
Well, the one I love is the one coming up, I think, where the The total police car. And there's a pause. Right here, here we are. Look, right.
Now it goes right over this one here.
Yeah, I love this where this one. Now watch that. Now watch the next cut.
Now they now all they come out. Okay. Well, that's the way it should be.
Well, that's life. You know. But yes, I'm immoral.
I know. Ian is saying important. To me, oh, why do you want... I said, come on, Ian. Have the guys get out and see them walk and talk.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, it's imperative.
Oh, this thing here, the Perrier. Remember this? All the...
Well, it's interesting that it seems seriously like product placement. I think we went to Pepsi, we went to Coke, and they wouldn't do it. And Pepsi, of course, offered to do it, so we took them up. Now, this is a great...
I just want to say on that, the problem with it is that you have to get a case of empties, because you can't do that with real full thing. So you really have to have the approval of some organization, so that's why I went to end up with Perrier.
The great special effects.
I love this. This was your idea. This whole statue on top.
That was the idea.
All your storyboard and everything. It worked out well. Got a lot of laughs.
Yeah.
People love it. And, right.
Very well edited again by Terry.
And then the little grace note here at the end of this scene is the the one that people love the most. Bond straightening his tie.
Yes. It's just perfect Bond, really. Now, this was a little bit of a story glitch coming up. I mean, you know, as you'll see, of course, the tank suddenly pulls
bridge.
Up on the bridge above, and you wonder how the hell the tank got there. I think it's legitimate, but on the other hand, you feel, well, that it's something...
Well, you plant the seed.
You get away with it.
Bond was watching, so Bond is doing something to get it.
So, I mean, it's weak, but it's we get away with it, I suppose, is the best you can actually say. The bridge, of course, is it's all cheated because there is no bridge above all of above the train. This is a location up near Peterborough in England, the old sugar factory, I seem to remember. And this train, of course, is another Peter Lamont special.
Well, we took a real locomotive and put all this cladding on. We had steel workers. It's all fully cladded with real iron.
Absolutely. Now, this is a great sequence, again with Derek Meddings, where he, after the interior of the train... where it's a combination of models, the real train, special effects. But the real credit goes to Derek Meddings, because the train and what happens at the end of this sequence is all him, really.
And Famke had a little bit of a concern that she didn't have enough dialogue in this scene, but the way her reactions were done, what you gave her to do as far as reactions... makes dialogue almost irrelevant for her.
Well, it's interesting. I remember she was upset at the time at this scene, because here she is sitting in the background. Everybody else seems to have the work to do, and of course, because she had nothing to say, she was upset about it. But I had to convince her, of course, that you know you don't need to say lines to actually be to be effective. And after the train crashes, of course, I remember she got a laugh just by cutting to her reaction, getting up silently off the floor, and subsequent reactions in the train.
That's right. When she says he's going to ram us, everybody laughs.
I know.
She looks like she's looking forward to it.
Well, of course, she is looking forward to it, but it's true. I mean, now here's a model shot. Look, this one of the tank. We weren't allowed to put the real tank in the middle of the railway line.
Yeah, but that was a full-size model.
No, that was the smaller model. That's the full size. Right? The reverse is, but it's all done. And it's great when even we ourselves don't know what's model and what's real, because it's obviously it all works. Here we go. That's our real train, and of course, now we're on to the model.
Bond. Only Bond.
Yeah, that's what she got.
That was the great laugh. She got a great laugh on that. Here we go. Now we're into that's all model. That's obviously real. And the studio. And this is all model, what you see from now on. It's a great piece of work. Even a model Pierce, how's that? No. As I said before, everything in this film seems to explode at the end of the scene, and this is no exception. very tough scenes to do, actually. I mean, interior scenes. I think the scenes I found the most difficult and frustrating, and the ones I hated most are the ones I hated doing most are the ones in this train.
Well, it was a long, narrow set, and there was no...
We couldn't fly the walls. It was all locked down because the lights were in and everything, and...
But it's effective. I mean,
it works extremely well, but from a director's point of view, it was very, very frustrating. I think I was in my worst moods during this. I hated
it was so small to work in, hard to light, and hard to move, and the camera took up so much space.
Half the crew have got to be outside while this is all set up, and you're treading on each other's toes. They're a nightmare, these sets, quite frankly. But the scenes turned out well, and...
Where is she?
For that, I was pleased. It was quite a long shoot in here as well. What you have to do as a director is shoot with the lights, is what we call it, which means that you shoot every setup right throughout the scene one way, you then light the other way, and you shoot everything. You progress through the whole scene again and shoot with all the lights in the other direction.
So, back where we started, James.
Okay, here we are, and there's Oromov has just come in. Everyone, of course, wearing suits, and Oromov in his military splendor and so forth. Which brings me to Lindy Hemmings, of course, who was the costume designer. Now, she had done 4 weddings and a funeral, Mike, before that.
Yes, she had. Oh, had a wonderful CV, and came right to, she won an authentic uniform from the Russians. Everything is the way they should have been. She went, and you can't really buy the stuff. You actually have to have most of it made. But nevertheless, address the women, I think.
And, of course, the great thing that we all looked at each other and said, no boiler suits. Do you remember? Those terrible, those orange and
orange
green
jumpsuits.
Jumpsuits. In every Bond film, they've got jumpsuits
on. She had a lot of fun with Famke. You know, Famke's nice and tall, has a great figure, and could wear all these wonderful... costumes, sort of.
Yes. And she put Sean Bean in black all the time, you know, the villain and so forth, so he wears black, and she did a terrific job. I think she's working with Jack Nicholson at the moment doing a film.
Fine. Thank you very much.
Again, this was a complicated scene to shoot, given that we had the this very tight set.
What are you doing?
And again, there's a lot of humour in this scene as well. I mean, humour and tension.
Yeah, it's a chance to get, of course, in the plot, you have to track them to their next position from here, using, Alan Cumming's own computer against him to track him down.
So that's right.
That's part of the fun of it.
Always amazed me that section of the story worked. I mean, I remember we talked about this in detail, having set it up at the facility in Sevenaya very early on, you know, placing all this stuff about, you know, being able to track them and so forth, that it actually makes some kind of sense this far down the line.
What does that mean?
We've got 3 minutes.
Right. And some of this was a model and some was real. Most of it was real. It was amazing that they had a real helicopter and the piece of the train they had that they built and all that.
Well, I always think that helicopter always looks like a model to me.
I know, it has real people inside.
It's the real thing. Yes, so all this pen flipping is great because poor old Alan Cummings had to kind of twist this pen and make it look as natural as possible. And he rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed, and it's not easy, you know, to make the point, of course, that this places the idea that later on in the story when he has that lethal pen that Bond gave Q in his hand,
he will flick it.
He fidgets about with it, flicks it, and nobody knows whether it's going to blow up or not. So, in a sense, his twiddling the pen now is placing that moment later on in the movie. And guess what? Here again, I guess they'll get out in the nick of time, and of course,
and back to Cuba. Just when everybody thought Cuba was a nice place to go, Castro goes and shoots down a couple of unarmed planes.
Here we go, and of course, guess what? They escape by the skin of their teeth.
Yeah, and this, I think, too. Here is Bond and Pierce and Isabella right there with a big explosion behind
them.
They were game for that. You know?
Yes, yeah. No, they did that very well. That was the last of the blowing ups for a while, but there's an awful lot of things went bang. This is a lovely scene. I think there's a great moment between them both here.
It's kind of where they get together and romantically or take an interest in each other.
I think it's a very fast-paced film. You know, I think the pace of the film never flags. And this is probably just a nice moment to rest up a bit and, you know, take a breath. And it sort of allows this to happen, I think.
I suppose that depends on
all the scene. The Caribbean, of course, was that they're talking about for Cuba is Puerto Rico.
Yeah, and we went down there, and it was one of the first locations we went on together, didn't we?
Yes, it was, I think, in the first...
we did that in January, right?
The first 10 days, wasn't it? We were
As soon as we finished out the sets they built, we went off there and...
Now, the interesting thing is that to find a beach that looks halfway decent in Puerto Rico is almost impossible, if you remember.
That's right. And one that doesn't have people. And the reason this one was so nice is that it's blocked off from the roads by a big dump, if you remember the city.
No,
dump.
This is not the beach. This is not that one. This is another beach, this one, isn't it?
No,
you're quite right.
That's right. Both of them. Well, one was an official dump, and the other one was just a... But that's why it was such a nice piece of land, because you couldn't get to it.
And we had to break the beach and get whatever Coke cans and rubbish were lying there. Now, this is interesting, because the pilot of this plane, who dropped it on a sixpence in front of the car, is what, Tom was...
Tom Denehy.
73 years old?
He was. He was great. What a pro. I mean, he did this several times.
10 times, I think he did this, didn't he? Dropped it down, and just about every time he made it perfect. And probably one of the best stunt pilots in the world. He's 73 years old. This is, of course, where we reintroduce Joe Don.
I remember this one was a tough one. We ran out of light, and we had to come back the morning we left.
That's right, on Saturday morning. That's right, we ran out of light.
Right, and Pierce wasn't there, and I had to throw the keys to Joe Don Baker, and I missed him about 10 times before he finally got him in his hat.
An interesting thing is a lot of questions, remember, now we're talking after the film has come out, of course, is why wasn't the BMW used more? Well, what's interesting was that the BMW deal came in quite late in the story. In terms of discussions, we'd already had the script pretty much finalized, and so it was a matter of actually dropping it in where we could, which we did.
Yeah, so it doesn't have any; it doesn't use its rockets or anything like that.
And a lot of people comment on that, and that really is the reason for it.
Joe Don was he was always trying to figure out how to make this scene interesting.
Yes. I don't think he ever quite understood the scene. But also, the weather was absolutely gorgeous, wasn't it?
Oh, we were so lucky.
Really, we fell on our feet here. The weather was magnificent.
Because it was so unpredictable that time of year.
Yeah. A beautiful little area as well. The car looks great, of course.
Yeah, well, there was only two of these in the world. You know, at the time, these were the two prototypes. And if anything happened to them, BMW would have killed us.
Also, the other thing was they were trying to keep it under wraps and hide it. It was a hoot, of course, because the first thing that came out was a news helicopter, and I think the paper was in the picture of the BMW was in the next day, wasn't it?
Local paper. They kept it under wraps. They always had it undercover on the street and whenever they transported it.
Yeah. Maybe. But, of course, the press will always find a way, and they did.
Now comes the romantic scene here.
There's a scene which we liked, and you know, it's a very interesting scene. It's a very beautiful scene as well.
It's a sort of a departure from the Bond types of scenes. There have been romantic scenes, but never quite in this tone. But it worked out really well. I had some doubts about it myself, but
Bruce, I'll never forget when he was writing this scene. The previous version to this had a hilarious line where he was quoting from The Ancient Mariner.
That's right, right.
My ship is so big.
My boat is so small, the ocean is so big. My boat. Anyway, he came out and rewrote that. But Barbara was very very much stuck with him and got him to... kept at it, too, to really make this scene work. And
now, this is a scene I rehearsed for 2 hours the night before with them. I got them into a hotel room. And we rehearsed for a long time because it's a very difficult scene to pull off and make convincing without making it, you know, seem like... Mm-hmm. those 2 hours really paid off, because it took half a day to shoot this. We were finished by lunchtime.
Mm-hmm. And that... And this was, remember, the tide was coming.
That's right.
I'm running on a beach here.
Yeah.
Because we were being backed up against the...
Now, this was genuinely the only bit of beach, and the whole... I covered in the helicopter when I was doing my location scouting. Mm-hmm. I think I went right round the whole island from top to bottom. I think you probably did at one point as well, looking for lakes. Yeah. No luck. And so we had to... This was the only bit of beach that... that was possible to shoot on.
No, this was a wonderful thing you did here, because you did this all in one shot.
Yeah,
the whole scene is played in this one nice shot, and it's a really
well. Again, what's interesting, if you remember, the script called for basically a love scene where they get together in bed and get at it. But I remember thinking about it sort of days before, thinking it just simply won't work. You know, that it just didn't feel right that he should be
going.
They should be having sex, basically, and it felt awkward to me, and it felt another film maybe, but
yeah.
And I think it turns out much better this way. Much I would have loved to have shot the scene, of course, but the interesting thing was Isabella was all ready for it. You know that she said to, she was quite angry that she couldn't dive on top of him. I remember she said to me, "Well, I came all prepared. I was all ready, and now we're not doing it."
But at least it has a nice sense of humor about
it. Lovely.
That's what's nice. It's playful and funny,
mm.
And that's a good thing about it.
Now, when we come out of this is where was it? The Dominican Republic, was it?
Yeah, this was the Dominican Republic. A shot that had a problem steadying.
That's right. We had a lot of
digital stuff in it.
They said the rotor was out of balance on the helicopter. It vibrated, and again, so we had this juddering effect, which was essentially cured by digital, which was a terrific asset for us, because we certainly didn't want to go out there and shoot it.
Turn 10 degrees south.
Or reshoot it.
Bearing 184.
And again, these backgrounds are what you see behind.
They're
and to
digital,
cut with this
yeah.
out, well, they're all Derek's models, mm-hmm. to a lot of them, to a large extent. And
that's Derek's model.
That's Derek's model there behind. And all digital, of course. Gone are the days of just back projection. There you have Derek's model again. We couldn't find a lake in Puerto Rico for love nor money, so all of this is Derek's.
You know, the lake had to be kind of circular, at least.
Yeah.
But there was nothing that... except long, thin legs.
Yeah, there was no way we could actually do it for real. And this is a scene which is... which I haven't looked at the airline version, but God, it can't make any sense at all, because you aren't allowed to see planes being hit or explode or do anything.
I know,
so I wouldn't even... I don't think I could ever face looking at the scene on an airline, because it's gone, basically. How they get into the jungle will always remain a mystery to me, but... Anyway, great, again, Derek, to
yeah,
the
nice
floor here. Look at this,
models,
look at the model
the
shot
thing.
There. Great there. Now we're in the studio, and so we go on.
And a nice cut here from the time he comes out to when she's...
Yes, a great time cut. It's one of the things that I think you have to do is to try and assess the pace of a scene, and it's always the thing of getting out of cars, getting out of vehicles can often be time-consuming and slows everything up, so you've got to devise a way in which to... move the story on.
So there, from there to there is a nice cut.
So it's and always a nice sharp sound gets you through on these cuts. In this case, it was him kicking the door. Now, the next sequence is interesting. They go down here. All of this is Peter Lamont from the studio, which is he did a great job with. But the next sequence where he sees the helicopter, again, was a slight cheat. And of course, you'll be able to recognize from Apocalypse Now, probably not nearly as good as that, but... it was that kind of slightly hallucinatory kind of image of the helicopter. And again, with the sound effects and so forth. But I remember Martin Sheen lying on the bed and this great image that Coppola had of the helicopter. The stunt girl here coming down, she'd just come off Waterworld, fed up. She'd done months at it. Nothing appeared to be happening. I don't know. And
there were some dangerous moments in this, though.
Yes, oh yes.
Shooting this because of the stuff falling out of the helicopter. Something fell out of the helicopter and they're shooting up and it just missed everybody. It's just one of those things you can't protect against.
Great scene here between
nice
the
entrance. And of course,
she does it marvelously. My God, she's, you know, she's violent as hell. I love it.
Lindsay Hemmings come with, you know, with this uniform for her.
Yes,
kind of militaristic.
It all sounds a bit, looks a bit Nazi, of course, and that's exactly that. She looks great. And, you know, it's interesting. She's doing a lot of work here and selling it, but I tell you, Pierce is equal. Look at the way he's selling that, you know. And, of course, actually, he's sitting on something.
Yeah, now this headbutt was taken out in England.
That's right, yes, the no headbutts. You know, we had a 12 certificate on there? A 12 certificate and a fitting end.
Mm.
Again, we had lessen the writhing and so forth in this because of the senses. But I don't feel anywhere down the line
we really suffered
because of the sensor cuts, I must say. And I thought, given we got a 12 certificate in England and I think a 13 in America, I was very happy with...
Yeah, it worked out well. One of the groaners there.
One of the groan lines, of course, yeah, which and we debated about whether... In fact, I cut out at one point because I thought this is just too bad. But I'm not sure whether you convinced me to put it back in. But of course, people do laugh at it, so it was right to leave it back in. They expect
they always expect something, you know, and I think they don't expect necessarily the most brilliant line, but they expect something.
Yes.
Here we are in the Peter Lamont set that was three stories high. They all are made out of structural steel. It was for real because everybody had to run around on it. So,
now this is very interesting because now what you're seeing is, again, Derek Meddings at his peak. And I think this dish, which of course is a real dish, but because of the complications of shooting and allowances and so forth, there was no way we could shoot it for real. So while there are... real shots of the dish, this is all model, and I think he did a fantastic job on this.
Yeah, well, of course, to bring it out of the water, we had
look
to
at this. Yeah, that's all. This is all model.
And the
this
most difficult thing with model is water. You always have to build a big enough,
give it the
model.
Scale and the sense. And I think the dish in our, the real dish is 1,000 feet across. I think the model is 50 feet across.
Mm-hmm.
Now you see the two figures. This is all, of course, digital model, which is amazing. You know, a lot of people have said to me, "Oh, how did you ever get the? Is it real that?" Sequence when the transmitter comes out of the water. Yeah.
Better not be rejected.
Okay, here we are. We're meanwhile back to what we, of course, mirrored earlier on. Now this is the draining of the lake. I remember we talked about doing this, and we both looked at each other and said, "Well, let's write it, but we'll never do it. You know, it's impossible."
Yeah, but it's this kind of stuff that a lot of the kids like, you know.
Well, it's what Bond's all about, isn't it? Look at the scale of this thing, you know. And it's a perfect it's a perfect replica of the dish. Now, I think in a second you will actually see the real dish. I think there's one shot that we have where they are about to climb onto the dish, and it's right.
It's wonderful the way the shadow in there and everything.
Yeah, well, I think the shadow locks the whole thing into reality. This is all model, of course. But this is the real dish, so it gives you an idea of the scale, even though, of course, we... Now, that's the real one. And that, of course, is the real transmitter.
Yeah, now that's actually used to... it's a radio telescope. It's used to investigate deep space in Puerto Rico.
Aren't they saying that if there's any alien life up there, that this will be the... transmitter that will
possibly, yeah. It's
they like to say that.
They like to say it, although the scientists down there really
shrug their shoulders,
disavow it all. Well, remember this thing? How we trying to figure out how to write the thing and then we could jam how to design this thing. And
finally,
a big chain drive.
Now this is an interesting sequence. This is a real combination of location, studio, model.
How do you stop it?
And a bit of digital. Now that's... So this is all studio, this stuff. All the close-up stuff of them, that's model. Right? And this is all studio. And all the wide shots like that are model. And the points of view like that are the real dish. We rolled a camera down the real dish to
get that kind of effect.
So, I mean, it's pretty seamless, I think, the whole sequence. And it's a sequence that I remember... thinking about simply because, you know, how the hell do you get them from the edge of the dish into the control room fast. Well, that was the only solution.
Mm-hmm.
On my count.
It's a great set, this. I mean, he really, you know, in that true tradition of Bond, it's admittedly the control room again, but it's certainly very well done by Peter Lamont.
And Sean Bean kept it going here. He's a good actor. He's very, you know, he's not too well known in the States now, but I think he has that Sharp's Rifle series that he's in England. He's a big star.
Very much so, and he's... He's very successful in England. A very low-key villain, actually.
God save the Queen.
Here we are back in the big set, right at the top.
That's right, and this is where we had to use the... You know, we probably get the widest shots of the set. All on different levels. Interesting, the studio that we... or should I say the factory we converted into the studio had low ceilings, didn't it?
Mm,
so
yeah,
in a way, everything had to be compressed to...
We had 40-foot ceilings, you know, this we built a huge stages. The two stages we had were as big as any stages in Europe.
Yeah. There's a great reaction here, actually, where Bond, he fires the gun. And I think this is perfect Bond. Watch this.
Yeah.
Just nudges his head back like it's a fly buzzing around his ear. I think that's perfect Bond. A good set to work in, this. I mean, a lot of space and interesting... A well-designed set, and this is something that I enjoyed. Again, of course, we blow the hell out of it at the end of it, but as all in all Bond films, every control room seems to erupt at the end of it, but we'll come to.
Here's the gas. Remember all this gas you had pouring down, pools
yep.
of it dripping down?
This is how to link up all the... This is where we kind of linked all these sort of elements. This is interesting. Of course, there she is behind the tank there. Now, one of the problems with all of this, of course, was that once she went down that ladder, she decides for herself to actually tweak the computers. And how the hell she gets across there without being seen is a complete mystery. But, of course, just by smoke and mirrors, you can actually...
James.
You can make it convincing.
What an unpleasant surprise. We aim to please.
So the this was always these scenes are always ones in the Bond films the most difficult to bring off because they've got you know they've got Bond captured. You want to know what the plot's about, and you have to figure out how he's going to get away.
Well, this is always the point where the villain says, "Ah, I'm doing this because."
That's right. Know. It's not just the end of the world, Mr. Bond. Well, I have something else in mind.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And they are difficult because, of course, they're expository and so forth. And to be able to kind of maintain an edge to them and a pace to them, I think is... I think that's difficult. And I think hopefully we pulled it off. Endless computers, of course, transferring money and so forth. Huge screen. Nicely loaned to us by what? Panasonic, was it? Or was it...
It was Pioneer.
Pioneer, was it?
Yeah,
yes.
It was a big... I forget how many. It was a huge number of
screens,
individual screens in there.
And of course, product placement is a big thing in a Bond film. I mean, Pierce was outfitted by Brioni, and he wore Omega watches and so forth. I mean, it's a big thing in movies these days. The real trick is to try and make sure it doesn't scream out at an audience.
Yeah, you can't really jam it down everyone's throats. It brings them out of the movie and makes them feel like they're just being... sold something, but on the other hand, you like to use real products in a film to give it authenticity. You
yes,
know?
No.
You can't manufacture all fictitious products. You know? Criminal records.
Yes, this was good. I was, when she's dragged in, and it's an interesting speech, the speech about Bond's, you know, mm-hmm. how many martinis...
all that stuff, and how many... Does it sue the men you killed, or...
Now, that all comes... That's
about the
from Michael France, wasn't it? That was from the original script, that whole speech, because it was a very eloquent speech,
mm-hmm.
and it really strikes a chord, and I think it was the best speech Michael wrote in that script.
Yeah, well, a lot of his material, you know, came through in the final... result.
England is about to learn the cost
of... I think all the writers made major contributions, each one of them. They were good to work with.
Yes, it's interesting. I suppose an awful lot of people don't realise quite how much the how much work does go into the script and the various writers and so forth. But it's an agonising process, I find. It's an agonisingly difficult to.
You know, I think if a producer's work, if he does it right, most of the work goes in before the cameras start.
Yeah. Really well, if you remember, one of the things we discussed with all of this was simply that we had to shoot the script. We were going to shoot a film of a certain length, and we weren't going to shoot a lot of extra scenes that were going to end up on the cutting room floor. And I think of the scenes we shot, or that were cut, I think perhaps two were cut, weren't they?
Yeah.
Two or three were cut, amounting to no more than, as seen, 3 minutes in total.
All the rest of the stuff were trims on the existing scenes.
Yeah.
Tightening.
Now, this is a great piece of editing coming up where he sits down and he starts flipping the pen and pressing the end of the pen. And I think Terry, makes a terrific job of the way he cuts this scene.
I think Isabella did well, the way she came in and whacked him. She really looked like you believe it, don't you?
Yes, the little bugger deserved it. Absolutely no question about that. Here he is.
Yeah. I was down in New York on 46th Street and Broadway when I saw this scene on the opening night.
Yeah.
And every click of the pen, the audience was going, ooh, oh, yeah. They really reacted to this. It was very satisfying because you're never quite sure if everyone's getting it.
Well, it's also such a, in a way, it's a kind of ludicrous concept in a way, because you know what I mean, you think, oh my god, the clicking pen, is it but it comes off, and yes, you're right, the audience always used to react to that.
And this is a good line, it goes back to what he said to her in the bed, sort of, she throws the back at him, never, always call their bluff.
Yes, always got a big laugh, didn't it, which was, it's very gratifying actually, when the lions do actually get the laughs, and consistently get the laughs, and they both played them very well there. They're both extremely good at humour. There's a great moment here where he drops the pen. That was an accident, actually, when we were filming. But Terry, being the editor he is, somehow incorporated it into the... there we go. Mm-hmm. There we go.
Give me the cards, Natalia!
Here we are, back on track.
Okay. Another big bang. God, this was a
mammoth, wasn't it?
This whole thing going up and
all this
guys on fire and all these stunt people and oh god, it was a major.
We actually did destroy the set basically, didn't we? When that whole thing went up.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot of take twos, Lou.
No, I think it all had to be one take.
By the way, I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Yeah, this was a big.
Again, everything was very safe, no one was hurt during that scene, and
this was actually out on location, by the way, all the reverses, and then this way is in the studio.
That's correct, yeah.
No, you're right, it was a safe thing. Well, it's the stuntmen and the special effects people working together.
Well, I think there were two injuries, one before we started where
they were practicing rappelling,
and the rope.
The guy slipped
and hurt his back very badly, and was in plaster for about 4 months. The other was the guy who was driving the tank, who broke his wrist at one point, came off a motorbike.
Mm-hmm.
These are nightmare scenes to set up because every bit has got, the fires have to be lit, everything has got to be, on standby. All the people racing to go in and put them out for safety, and I mean, I have to tell you that. They're very complicated. Now, this is a combination, again, this whole sequence of studio, of model, of the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's pretty seamless, don't you?
It really works.
I mean, again, when we went out there, I remember to begin with, we used to have long meetings discussing this. And we'd come to grind to a halt because the whole horror and impossibility of it all seemed...
But you have to know exactly what you can need to build. And what you need to shoot for real, and it's
exactly right. And there we go. So again, it's a combination of the real. Studio this stuff.
Well, they let us out in this thing. And no, I actually went up there and walked around.
Oh, you did? Yeah.
And when we recce'd it and some of the shooting in it was, it's scary because when you look down, there's an open grid. You're standing on, you feel like you're standing on air, it's not all those platforms are all open steel.
Yeah. Here we go.
That's a good...
Oh,
that was great. Up there.
The
double's working up there and doing those stunts.
It all cuts pretty
500
full,
feet off the ground.
Yep. And again, the chain room worked extremely well. That was a kind of lazy. Remember, we changed.
Yes.
It? I can't quite remember what
well,
we had before.
Wanted,
I had to I had to redraw the whole thing, but it kind of worked.
We had to come up with something that was pretty simple and people understood.
Now these are the two guys doing it themselves, basically, which is not over the stuntman obviously doing that sequence, but Pierce and Sean rehearsed this stuff. And the fight you'll see, the fist fight that's coming up, they did just about everything in the fight.
Remember
no
you
double.
Saying you wanted to duplicate from Russia with Love the fight in the train. You always thought that was the best, and you wanted to get that physicality back in.
That's right, and you know, heavy hitting in a very small space. And I always thought that was a great sequence in From Russia with Love. And we tried to kind of duplicate it, I suppose. It was. In this upcoming sequence. That sequence is a combination of studio and the real thing.
And this is the fight that's coming up.
This is the
great
fight that's
fight.
Coming up, yeah.
And they did it all except for one
shot as he goes through the wall.
Yeah.
That was the only thing. And
other than that, it's all them. It's amazing.
Yeah. They rehearsed with Simon for a long time. It's really good. They sell it really well, these two. I shot all this handheld, of course, because just to give the sort of violence of the piece. At the end of this fight, of course, not a drop of blood.
But the lighting was good.
Yeah,
too.
Very low
Phil
key.
Did a great job of kind of getting a real atmosphere of being inside this claustrophobic space.
Yeah.
Which just
it also took away a little bit of the... And the headbutts, of course, had to all go out for the British version. But it's still cut together pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty seamless.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly shorter, of course. And these scenes and the upcoming scenes on the ladder, I think, were possibly some of the most difficult to
achieve. Ladder work is hard because you can't really hold people on a total vertical, and yet you need some of that.
And an awful lot of green screen and stuff, but I think it worked extremely well. And you know, here he's got the gun on Bond. Nobody ever pulls the trigger straight away on Bond. There's always some kind of speech where meanwhile he gets away. Now, this is all green screen.
Yeah.
Very good model, green screen. Now, that's the shot where Pierce did his nuts.
Yeah, and he hurt his hand, didn't he?
He hurt his hand and he hurt his back. And I said, I want to do take two. And he said, right. He said, he screamed at me, you get one more take and that's it. You can blame him. It looks very convincing, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really...
We had to figure out the angles where that little sump would be.
Where
the
little
sump
would be, yeah. It's very convincing to me. It was.
Some of this is in this painted background in the studio. Some's outside.
We did a lot of sky replacements to get the matching to get the matching correct, because obviously if you're shooting between model, the location, and the studio, it's almost impossible to match. So you can replace skies digitally. Relatively simply, so that's what we did. There's a great stunt coming up. Oh no, he's gone down the ladder already, has he?
Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
He did that fall.
Yeah, great angle that, because there's a wire leading up that they took out digitally. There he is. Oh my, ouch.
It's all good stuff.
Oh, look, marvellous, the sequence. And again, I remember, you know, you and I going over the storyboards and a horror of thinking how the hell do you put them on
well,
the
how
end
many
of this?
Different, yeah, and how many, you know, where, what do we have to build? What section?
Oh,
where are we going to shoot
them? Pete Lamont, I thought, did a fantastic job of that, of using the sections we wanted, working off the storyboards, angling the, angling the spike and so forth.
Now, here they are out. This is the outside. Where there is there. Oops, no.
That's more, that's digital, of course.
It's the jump.
Yeah, and then we go to the model for the bit where, of course,
he
falls. All of that's model. Again, it's pretty seamless, all that stuff.
No.
He lets him go. Nice Bond. We actually were worried about that, do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
I shot an extra one.
Yeah, just in case.
So.
And this fall, this guy, the stuntman that did that was pretty good.
Yes.
That was it's harder than it looks because there's no padding. I mean, you just have padding on your back.
Yeah. Now, here's interesting. I had to cut off the shot very quickly because of the blood quotient. A tiny bit of blood on his mouth, and the sensors objected.
Now, you remember this shot? We were the last day of shooting.
Oh, don't tell me.
And we were waiting for the sun and waiting.
Oh, it was horrendous.
Oh, I really was.
It was a Saturday. We sat
yes, we were there
and
all day Saturday. And all didn't want to go another week.
And when did we get 2 minutes of sun?
Okay,
that's the shot there.
The
shot. And we got it. Otherwise, we would have been back. My God.
God, yeah. We finally, it was the last day of shooting. I was so relieved.
This again looks, it's in true Bond tradition, everything blowing up and there's Trevelyan copying it, marvellous kind of.
How many times we shoot this?
I think 10 times. Mm. To get the rubble and the kind of look of the thing all, it's. Here he is.
And here's another shot, the frozen shot. Remember the tanks blowing up?
God, how many times did we do that to try and get it right?
We had poor Arthur Worcester in there shooting it, and then you came down and shot it, and it was just.
And then that's right, and then one tank didn't blow, and so anyway, we find the God of Forces. One always does with these things.
There he is. Now that's at Planet Hollywood right now.
Yes.
In the window.
Oh, is it? Yeah, right. And this, of course, was a scene shot, the last scene of the movie, as always, of course, is shot very early on in the schedule. This is at Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
And,
this was another one. Remember, we were chasing the sun?
Yeah,
all
I had to finish at 5:30, the sun was down.
Well, this was just the last shot of the day. It was,
yep.
The sun was actually moving up the background. And we kept on moving across the
falling
field.
Into each other's arms at the end. Oh, my God, we got this. So this whole scene was shot by 5:30 in the afternoon, one day, I remember, yeah.
Well, we had to do, the scenes coming up are the ones we shot earlier.
Yes, that's right.
Which was Joe Don and all the Marines.
That's about to happen, yeah.
Now, those Marines are producer's joy. They come with all their wardrobe and they do their own makeup.
Yeah. And from a director's point of view, they do exactly what you tell them. You say, lie there for an hour. They lie there for an hour.
I know, all those guys would lie there without making a peep.
And I'd say to the commanding officer, well, they can all get up now. It's fine. Give them a break. He said, no, they can stay down there.
That's right. I was afraid of walking on them going through there. They were so still, you could walk on them.
And the helicopters, the Hueys, the three Hueys had to drop in and so forth. I mean, it's a fun scene for an end of Bond. I think it worked, and we're always looking for a button to the movie, which one always does. But I think it works really well. I liked it.
And it goes out with a nice smile.
Three helicopters take off. I always thought that the helicopter with Bond and Natalia should blow up like everything else in the movie, just as it's disappearing, the credits are rolling. But I was overruled on that one, so there we are.
Well, sitting here and talking about it and thinking about it, it was fun, really. It had its moments, but I guess my memories are.
I think they're all good.
Forget the bad times and just remember.
Well, filming is always a battleground. That's the point. And I think the studio were terrific. And I feel that the you sort of feel in the aftermath. We had a lot of number crunching, or one particular period where we had to crunch numbers. We didn't, by Hollywood standards, have the biggest budget in the world. It was a big budget, but I think that makes you work harder to. And look for simpler solutions, which are often the best solutions. So
yeah, I think it's good discipline.
Yeah.
And so anyway, there it is. The memory of Derek Mannings. Unfortunately, he died just 2 months after we finished.
That's right. He died, and it was.
It was terrible. He was sick during the filming, but he never let it up. He
never complained. He was an instinctive model maker, and. Certainly the best in England, if not the best in the world, in my view.
Yeah, and I had worked with him, 20 years, and...
Yes, he got an Academy Award, I think, for Superman with Dick Donner. I think that was his, that was the highlight of his career. But I think his models have never been better than in this movie. And, as a tribute to him, I don't think it could be better. But he's obviously sorely missed. And for the next Bond film, one wonders who the hell you will actually get to... replace a genius like that. I don't know.
But it was good. We had a mixture of a lot of our people who've been with the Bonds for a long time. We had a lot of good newcomers. It was a good mix.
It was a very good mix. It was a very tough film. I mean, I think we all looked at each other right at the beginning of this movie and said, well, you know, we've got one chance with it. Do you remember we said, if we don't get this right, the series is dead, was what we thought. And that was very much our attitude. And I must say that, you know, you guys as producers, both you and Barbara, kind of gave us free rein to do what, and on the other hand, pulled us in when we needed pulling in. And, you know, the end result, I think if we had to do it again, I would...
It's hard to know quite
where we could...
Well, you're... You know, you're great to work with because you have a, you know what you need to get to make the thing work, and you also know what it means to save a, you know, when you have to save money, and there's nothing more a producer can ask of a director than that.
Well, I think the whole secret of filmmaking is in the preparation, in my view. I think that we did a lot of preparation on this. We got the script right, I think, before we started shooting. And I don't think we fell into any of the traps that perhaps, often movies fall into.
I know. Whenever I hear that they're shooting a film and they've asked someone to come out and do a rewrite on the ending, you know trouble is brewing.
Yeah, well, so many films now, of course, in Hollywood.
You can't plan a film that way.
No, but they reshoot the endings endlessly. I mean, there's probably, I don't know what the percentage is, but it certainly must be...
I know, they're three filming in London right now, and they're reshooting the endings. But that's, you know, at least they've decided they want to do something, but sometimes they just start rewriting in the middle, and, oh, that's a kiss of death. Anyway.